we get the hour underway by welcoming in, from Boston Sports Journal, our friend Sean McAdam. Hello there, Sean.
Good afternoon, guys. I would only be concerned if that vulture was sent to you by the Arbitron Corporation. That may be... There's a negative message attached.
Well, we are.
I know that's not the case.
We are the carrion of the ratings, that's for sure. Well, it's good to talk with you, Sean, about these first place Boston Red Sox. If anybody had said that to you in March, would you have taken them seriously?
Not this. I mean, look, we're almost 6 weeks into the season, so there's a lot of baseball still to be played, but. I think I would have been surprised to know that they would still be in first place once we got into May. You know, we've all seen some surprise small sample results from the first couple of weeks every year. But when you get to 35 games, you're a couple of series away from being a quarter of the way through. Now, that's not they're not handing out any playoff invitations based on 35 or 40 games, but it would seem that we're getting further and further away from any suggestion that this is flukish. And, I am surprised. No getting around it. I think they've been blessed, for the most part, with pretty good health, although they've had a couple of minor things pop up in the last week with Arroyo in the hand and a hamstring for Kike Hernandez, though those are both expected to be short-term injuries. The pitching staff's been remarkably healthy, and I think the rotation has easily outperformed expectations. They've been in most every game, which I think is, says something about the makeup and the mental approach that this team has. You know, they're not getting blown out. Yeah, they've had stretches where they've played, obviously the first three games were not a good start. And then there was a stretch there, they lost 3 out of 4 in Texas last weekend. But for the most part, they've been in every game. They've been competitive. They haven't gotten into any protracted slumps. So, surprises all around in a good way.
And I thought some good signs in the last week or so with a nice hot stretch. I think, 7-game hitting streak for Marwin Gonzalez and Bobby Dalbec beginning to come back around.
Yeah, that bottom half of the lineup that had really been a black hole for them for the first, 3.5 to 4 weeks is showing some signs of life. You had two guys in that group, Cordero and Dalbec, who had hitless streaks of longer than 20 games, rather 20 at bats, seemed like 20 games at times, start to come around. Hunter Renfro has certainly woken up a little bit with 9 RBI this month and a couple of home runs in the last few games. Dalbec had 5 RBI between Friday and Saturday. Marwin Gonzalez, the 7-game hitting streak you mentioned. Even Cordero had the big 3-hit game on Thursday when he had to fill in for Hernandez. So, look, you're not expecting the kind of production from 7, 8, 9 that you're getting from 2, 3, 4, 5 with Verdugo, Bogarts, Martinez, and Devers, but they have to carry some weight, and they've got to provide some offense and not have that lineup so top heavy where after you get by Devers or maybe Vasquez at number 6 that you're getting literally nothing, which was the case for the first month. So just the fact that they're stirring awake and providing a little bit of production is certainly a good sign.
And you mentioned the starting rotation, Nick Pivetta at 5-0 now. Is he, from your perspective,
also
the biggest
not have that in the offense pool.
No, is he the biggest surprise out of that group?
I would guess so. I mean, we saw he had 2 spot starts in September last year, but it was so hard to know what was real and what was just, kind of a flash in the pan at the end there when they're playing for nothing. They were out of contention for weeks, if not months before that. No pressure. They're playing some teams that were also out of contention. So how real were those results? But in the case of Nick Pivetta, it looked like they were pretty indicative of what he's capable of. And, we've documented certainly the struggles this organization has had to develop starting pitching. And while you can't award them full credit for Pivetta, because this is a guy who had had major league appearances in parts of four seasons with the Phillies. They certainly have fixed whatever was wrong with him while he was in Philadelphia. He is, you know, he's had some spots of wildness. You even saw it yesterday with a couple of back-to-back walks in the first inning that threatened to derail him early, but he's able to make some in-game adjustments. You know, this is looking like that trade that sent Brandon Workman and Heath Embry for Nick Pivetta and Connor Siebold is looking like it might be Chaim Bloom's version of, dare I say, Jason Baratek and Derek Lowe for Heathcliff Slocum long ago. I don't know that either one of those guys are going to reach the vaunted heights that both Veritek and Lowe did for a long time in this organization. But when you can get one very good back-end starter, which is what Pivetta is looking like, and then remember that Siebold was the guy that they thought was the real prize in the package, and he's temporarily shut down with a little elbow soreness at AAA, though they don't think it's anything serious. You know, that has the potential to be an absolute steal of a deal, especially when Brandon Workman himself is now back part of the organization, and Heath Embry left too. So the Phillies have, not only was it lopsided to begin with, but the Phillies have absolutely nothing to show for that. And, you know, potentially the Red Sox have a couple of guys who could be part of the rotation for a while.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. From my perspective, the biggest disappointment so far is a guy that I had high hopes for, and I know you did too, Adam Ottavino, who was just really dealing with some major control problems, 11 walks in 14 innings so far.
Yeah, and to me, Rich, the thing that's even a little more troubling, because we're talking about a guy that's going to get in high leverage situations, you're going to see him in the eighth inning as you did yesterday, is that I think it's now 7 out of 16 appearances he has allowed the leadoff man to reach base. And that's just begging for trouble. It happened yesterday. It cost them a game not too long ago when he issued a it was in Texas last weekend, the final game of that series, where he walked the leadoff man. And sure enough, you know, this is one of those things that you can't explain no matter how advanced the analytics get. But the numbers suggest that it is more likely that a guy is going to come around to score when he walks to open an inning than he does when he singles to open an inning. I guess it sort of portends additional command and control problems for the pitcher. But, you know, you've got to be much more efficient than that, than to put the leadoff guy on almost half the time when you're coming in an eighth inning situation in which your team is leading. You know, and yesterday it was a two-run lead that soon became a one-run lead. You can't afford to do that. So whether that's Ottavino working through some mechanical things or not being able to command a particular pitch, but that's got to get better for him to be trusted in that spot.
What's the status of the injury to Tanner Houck?
Yeah, that's also a bit of a red flag, I guess, down at AAA, although the team continues to maintain that, as is the case with Siebold, that they've run some tests and there's nothing structurally wrong there. But whenever you hear the phrase flexor muscle, you think of the worst case scenario there, and that's ultimately Tommy John surgery, because the flexor muscle is connected to that ligament in your elbow that, when it goes, requires it to be surgically reattached with the tendon, and that's known more commonly as Tommy John. Now, I'm not trying to scare your drivers off the road here in the middle of rush hour, but you know, it's certainly something that piques your interest. And yet, as I said, they do not seem too alarmed. They've got them on a treatment program, and they're trying to be conservative, which is the way you want to, what you want to be with a guy who is potentially as important as Houck is. And that's a reminder of how quickly pitching depth can disappear for a team. You know, at the beginning of the year, going into spring training, everyone thought, well, you've got Houck at AAA Worcester. You've got Siebold, who looked good in spring training against some major league lineups and was a guy that you could foresee maybe being of some help maybe in the second half. And then the same with Brian Mata, who was going to be at AAA Worcester. Well, Mata has Tommy John, and the other two guys have varying degrees of elbow issues, and all of a sudden, all three of your top starting pitching options are sidelined. So they've been fortunate that they haven't had to utilize those guys except for, you know, in doubleheaders or covering for Eduardo Rodriguez at the beginning of the year. Their starters have been able to take their turns every time through. But we know you don't get through a 162-game season with just five or even six starters. It's more likely what you hope that you don't have 16 the way you did last year as they ran community auditions through Fenway and handed out starting assignments like lollipop. But, you know, they're going to need 8, 9, 10 guys to cover some of those starts. And the fact that, you know, one of them's down for the year and two others are currently sidelined certainly gives you some pause.
Sean, away from the Red Sox for a moment, normally when we think of bad long-term deals, it revolves around a pitcher. But as great as he has been, and he's certainly a Hall of Famer, was the Angels signing of Albert Pujols one of the worst long-term deals in recent history?
Yeah, and I think you could, you know, rewind the clock another 10 years, but I think even when that happened, people had the sense that this probably would not end well, and it certainly did not. When you think about what Pujols meant to the Cardinals organization in the city of St. Louis, you know, as great a baseball city as exists in the United States, you know, with a lot of legacy players from Musial to Gibson to Brock to on and on, all the great players they've had, they do not usually walk away from the opportunity to retain a franchise player like right. that. And yet the Angels, you know, piled the money so high that the Cardinals made the tough call of saying, sorry, you know, I guess you're going to be a member of the Los Angeles Angels. They got a lot of grief for that decision at the time, but it clearly turned out to be the right one. And it's a reminder that oftentimes the worst deals get signed with first base DH slugger types, because those players tend to age pretty quickly. The bat speed slows down. They're really not able to be, you know, solid defenders in the field and turn out to be DHs. They clog the middle of your lineup. They can't run very well. And I fear we're about to go through the same thing with Miguel Cabrera in Detroit. Yeah. And the bad news for the Tigers is they're not on the last year of that deal. They've got two more at $32 million each after this one. And this is a guy who, if you watched any of that series at Fenway last week, is a mere shadow of his former self. So, yeah, it's sad when a career ends that way, and yet, you know, I can think of no franchise that has made more poor signings than the Angels. It seems like they're always in love with the big name aging veterans, and it almost never ends well, and it certainly didn't with Pujols.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal. Sean, always fun to talk with you. Thanks for making time for us this afternoon, and we'll do it again before too long.
My pleasure, guys. Good to be on with you, as always.
Thanks, Sean. Sean McAdam talking baseball here.